KFWB News Talk 980. Welcome to the show we call The Credit Line with Adam Levin. I'm Jeff Levy. I host the show. Adam's the expert. Adam is a consumer advocate. He is a specialist when it comes to credit and protecting identity. Adam is the founder and chairman, if you will, of two very successful companies, Credit.com and IdentityTheft911.com. This man's got over 30 years' experience advocating for consumers. This man's held public office. He's run for Congress. He has lectured the Congress many times on all kinds of financial matters. So Adam built this show. He wants to empower you with easy-to-understand information about money, credit, loans, all of it. So you pay attention to this show, and this is where you learn how to bring your credit score up, how to keep it up, how to keep your identity safe, what happens when you marry somebody with bad credit. It's all here, and it's so easy to jump in. You call 888-539-2980. 888-KFWB-980. Write it down, 888-539-2980. 2980. Yo, Adam.
Panda. And hello, Los Angeles. And also to all of those people around the country who have been kind enough to write notes to me and say they're listening as we stream. It's great. It's exciting to be here today. And we got a great show. Great
Adam,
show.
Did you
Jerry
say
Detweiler, one of my favorite people.
Oh, yeah. Jerry Detweiler. I thought you said we're screaming. Is it screaming or streaming?
Streaming, screaming. Spreading the word.
All of
it's
that.
It's all good.
All of that, Adam. You mentioned Jerry Detweiler. What a giant in the business. She's a nationally recognized consumer advocate. She's what we would call the debt diva. She's the author of a bunch of books, including one called Debt Collection Answers. It's a book that shows you how to fight back against debt collectors who don't play by the rules. I'm sure you're really proud to have her as part of credit.com. So Adam, let's welcome her. Jerry, welcome.
Jerry, hi there.
Yep, I'm here.
Welcome.
Great. You know, one of my favorite Jerry stories, this will tell you a lot about her as a, you know, Jerry is always consulted by friends who want to do credit things, some of them smart, some of them not smart. The bottom line is, though, she is the kind of the wizard out there in the community. And someone said to her, Jerry, I'd like to give a credit card to my child, but I'd like it to only be used for emergencies. What advice would you give me for me to give to my child? And Jerry's response was, it's real simple. If you can eat it, drink it, burn it, or wear it, it's not an emergency.
Pretty
funny. So therefore, we'd like to welcome you, Jerry. And the area that we're going to talk about, too, with Jerry, and the first one has to do with swipe fees. Now, you know, there's new laws that are taking effect soon under the Dodd-Frank the Dodd-Frank Reform Act, and one of them is the limitation on swipe fees. And these are the fees that credit card companies and the banks have been charging to the merchants in order to process transactions. And these fees are generally split between the credit card company on one side and the merchant's card company on the other, and the bank. And they had been traditionally about 44 cents a transaction, and based on new authority given to the Federal Reserve under the Dodd-Frank Act and the Durbin Amendment, the Federal Reserve has lowered the amount of money that can be charged. Merchants argued that it would be very helpful to save them money, and they'd pass it on to consumers. So, Jerry, first, when does this go into effect?
Well, officially, Dodd-Frank goes into effect July 21st of this year. However, for the limitation on the swipe fee costs, the Fed has allowed implementation to start October 1st. So that means officially you'll see merchants could potentially see their swipe fees lowered that day. However, I wouldn't wait until October 1st to make a big purchase expecting that prices are going to drop, because remember, a lot of merchants, they're in agreements with the companies that help them process their credit card transactions, and not all those agreements are going to expire exactly on October 1st. So some of them, it could be a while before they actually see lower costs and in turn, hopefully, pass some of those costs on to consumers.
Do you think they'll really do that? They'll really pass these savings on to the consumers?
Well, that's a really good question, Adam. And the research so far coming out from other countries where they've regulated interchange have not seen consumer prices drop. Now, I can say that when you talk about your big box retailers, they're already in strong negotiating positions. They've spent a lot of money for this legislation, and they're very competitive on price. So they may be really hoping that they can offer some deals once the cost of swipe fees, which is a big cost of business for them, goes down. But I wouldn't hold my breath and expect October 1st suddenly things are going to become magically cheaper because, again, it's very complicated. If you think a credit card agreement is complicated, look at a merchant service agreement, the one that merchants sign to accept credit cards. Those things put credit card agreements to shame.
Oh, I have no doubt about that. Hey, so Jerry, what are the real consequences when you take revenue away from the banks? I mean, they're not going to take this sitting down, and they're pretty upset about it, and you're talking about billions and billions of dollars.
Yeah, absolutely. And the banks spent a lot of money lobbying against this legislation. So here's what I think is going to happen. A couple things to watch out for. Number one, if you have debit card rewards programs, you already probably know they're not as generous as credit card reward programs. And that's going to become even more so once this goes into effect this fall. The other thing we're probably going to see is it's going to be harder and harder to find a free checking account. Not impossible, but a lot of the reasons that, one of the big reasons that free checking is available is because of the money they make off those debit card swipe fees every time you use your debit card associated with your checking account. When that revenue goes down, checking account fees will probably increase. And the third thing to watch out for is to watch out for fees from your debit card issuer. We may see them starting to test annual fees or monthly fees, and I suspect it'll be a lot like those ATM fees, you know, where it started out at a dollar and they tested the water, and once consumers got used to it, they sort of turned up the heat, and pretty soon you're paying $3, $4, sometimes even $5 for an ATM fee. If this works, then you'll start seeing fees on your debit cards as well.
What do you think consumers might start opting for what they call prepaid debit cards that are really not covered by this Durbin Amendment? Do you see that happening?
That is a good question. There's a certain type of prepaid card that is exempted from Durbin. And so, for example, American Express recently came out with a prepaid card that probably is safe from that amendment. And so we may see more issuers trying to push prepaid cards, which are the cards where you load money onto the card and then spend it, versus the card being more like a plastic check accessing the money already in your account.
Hey, Jerry, there was quite a furor over the Kardashian card a while back, wasn't there?
That's right, because that card had really excessive fees, and they were worried they were marketing it maybe to young people, people who might not realize that using one of these cards would literally just nickel and dime away anything you loaded onto it. So that card was pulled within weeks.
So let me ask you a question now. So you've been talking about the fact that they could well charge us for debit card usage. They could continue to reduce their rewards. They could actually follow through. One threat I heard is they might limit the amount of transactions that consumers could make on debit cards to $50 or $100. And we know that every action generally creates a reaction, which then creates a reaction from consumers. And I remember during the credit card disaster of a couple years ago, the banks were closing accounts. They were cutting credit limits. People got really scared, and they began kind of a seismic shift over to the debit cards. The question is now, when the heat is on debit cards, because banks have got to figure out a way to raise money one way or another, do you think we're going to be shifting back to credit cards?
I actually don't think that's as big of a worry as we might think. Debit cards are more popular than credit cards, and I think most people have a real strong preference. Either they're sick of their credit card company, or they can't or won't get a credit card, or they decide, you know, certain types of purchases belong on a debit card and some belong on a credit card, and they use them that way. So fortunately, what happened with this whole brouhaha over the Durbin Amendment puts the cap on swipe fees right in the middle between what, you know, originally was proposed and what they're paying right now. So it's not the end of debit cards as we know it. What I do think we'll see, Adam, is we're going to see more innovation in the payment space. So whether it's mobile payments or other types of ways for consumers to pay, that's going to be coming, hopefully sooner rather than later, now that they know that debit cards, cards aren't the cash cow that they have been.
Yeah, and we've certainly been watching in the payments area now with the mobile payments, the magic just tap your card. And all of a sudden, it will be the new credit card. that kind of scares me from a security perspective. And speaking of security, with just a little time we have left in this segment, what are the benefits of credit cards versus debit cards when it comes to consumer protection?
You have several benefits between credit cards over or debit cards. One of the main benefits is you have this law, the Truth in Lending Act, behind you. So if there's a problem or a mistake on your bill, you have the right to say, I'm not paying that until you investigate and resolve. You have to put your dispute in writing. You have to follow the rules. But you do, that gives you protection. With a debit card, when you buy something, it's more like paying with cash or a check. You have to deal with the merchant to try to resolve it. The other big difference is the fraud protection. They're governed by two separate laws. So with a debit card, your liability starts potentially at $50.
Jerry, we've got to hold you right there. We're up against a break.
Okay.
Our phone number, 888-539-2980. You're listening to our guest, Jerry Detweiler, on the Credit Line, KFWB News Talk 980. KFWB News Talk 980. You're listening to the Credit Line with Adam Levin. I'm your host, Jeff Levy. We have a guest. Her name is Jerry Detweiler. Our phone number is, in case you want to jump in, 888-539-2980. Real simple, 888-KFWB-980. Adam had asked you a question, Jerry, and you were just finishing your answer about whether under the Durbin Amendment and all the things going on, are people switching from debit back to credit cards?
So, yeah, I think we're okay to still use your debit card. It's not the end of debit cards as we know it.
Very good. Adam, let's switch topics. We have a new term in the lexicon now. It's called underwater mortgages, and I'm not looking for things at the bottom of the ocean. But good grief. Jerry, you know so much about debt. Can we talk to you about mortgages?
Absolutely. I'm running a series next week on credit.com about what to do if you're underwater on your mortgage. And this affects a lot of people because about 25% of mortgages are underwater or almost at a break-even point right now. And that number increases to almost 40% if you have a second mortgage or a home equity line of credit.
So, Jerry, let me ask you, is this as bad or worse in California than the national average?
It actually is worse in California. The average amount of negative equity is about the highest in one of the highest in the country. It's about 93,000. So if you are underwater on your home in California, the average amount you're underwater is nearly $100,000. And unfortunately, that would almost buy a house in many parts of the country.
Well, that's pretty scary. So listen, you've got the six tips. Let's start with the first one.
Well, you can stay and pay, but the thing you have to really think about there is this long term. Is it feasible? Because a lot of people are continuing to pay, but they don't have any clue when they're going to return to positive equity and be able to actually move or sell their home.
What about loan mods? Do they work? Is there really such a thing?
Loan modifications are getting better, but that's not saying much because they're pretty bad. If you are successful with a loan modification, on average, payments drop by somewhere between $300 and $500 a month. What I'd like to see is more lenders reducing principal, the amount you owe, but only about 5%, actually a little bit less than that, of loan modifications right now cut down the amount the borrower is paying. So if you're underwater, you may have a lower payment, but you're still way underwater.
And, of course, there are so many horror stories out there about people who managed to get into a loan mod program, and then somewhere along the way, the bank decides they don't want them in anymore. It was kind of a temporary trial period, and they throw them out of the program, and then they hit them for fees for everything they didn't pay, plus they ask for all the money they didn't get during that period of reduced payments, and then their credit gets destroyed on top of it. So it's a tough road to hoe. The government really needs to step up in this area, and they sure haven't done it. So,
yeah,
Jerry,
what
about option two?
Refinance. There is the Home Affordable Refinance Program that lets you refinance your first mortgage, even if you're underwater, to the tune of 125%. So you owe more than your house is worth. The Home Affordable Refinance Program won't hurt your credit. You get a low fixed rate loan. It's very decent. You can go to youcanrefi.com to see if you qualify. And if you do, it could be a good way to keep you in your home, lower your payments and your interest rate.
Yeah, Jerry, one of the questions I have, though, is, you know, you're talking about the HAMP program, right? And how many people have actually been allowed in that program?
Well, there's two programs. HAMP is the modification program. HERP is the refinance program. The refinance program is a lot better because you're dealing with lenders who actually want to work with you. With HAMP, you're dealing with your lender who may not have a financial incentive to modify your loan. So it's been considered a dismal failure by many. Again, it's starting to get better, but we still have not seen it. It's been a drop in the bucket compared to the number of people who need help.
Jerry, what's your next tip?
A short sale is another option. There have been 63,000 short sales, for example, in the second quarter of 2010. So those are becoming pretty popular. California can be ideal for this because in many situations, California mortgages are non-recourse loans, meaning they can't come after you for a deficiency. But you should find that out before you go through a short sale, and you try to get something in writing confirming that you won't owe anything, because a short sale is a big hit to your credit, and the last thing you want to do is go through that and then discover, well, gee, I've ruined my credit, and they're going to come after me for the balance that's due.
So what would
also,
be the next?
Are there tax consequences here?
Absolutely. With a short sale or with a foreclosure, you have to find out, will I owe taxes? Not everybody will, but you may owe taxes on the forgiven debt. And if your lender's forgiving $100,000 and you may have to count that as income, that could be a significant tax hit.
What's the next tip?
Another option would be just to walk away, and that's becoming increasingly popular. That's where you basically let your house go into foreclosure. One thing I found interesting in researching this series for Credit.com is that the average person who stops paying on their mortgage stays in there about 2 years before the bank actually takes the home back. And so one thing some people are doing is they're just using that mortgage payment money to pay other debts, save up for their place they're going to rent afterwards. They're just hunkering down. And I profile a gentleman in Southern California who's doing this right now, and it's been almost 2 years since he just gave up on his loan, and he still has the house. He keeps it in good condition. He's actually renting it out, but he's not living there anymore, and he doesn't want it.
So what's your final option?
Bankruptcy is another option. Now, bankruptcy is not a great option in many cases because it doesn't allow you to reduce the amount you owe on your first mortgage, but it could wipe out a second mortgage, and it could let you catch up on payments on your first or wipe out other debts so that your mortgage is affordable. It's something I would definitely consider because when you wipe out a debt in bankruptcy, there's no tax consequences. The lender can't come after you. It is completely done. You walk away. You get a fresh start.
We have a caller who has a question about swipe fees. I believe the caller is a merchant. Can we talk to her?
Sure.
Let's bring her on. Sherry, welcome to the program.
Hi there.
Hi.
Good morning.
Good morning. You've got Jeff and Adam.
Pardon me?
Go ahead.
Okay. My question regarding the swipe fees is, did I hear you correctly say that if we have a contract with a certain processor now, our fees will not reduce until the contract is renegotiated or runs out?
Adam, what do you think?
Jerry, what's your take on that?
We have to hold off on Jerry for just a second. So it's a great question. I think a lot of merchants, Adam, are going to be concerned about that. What's your take on it?
Well, my take is that depending upon the kind of contract they have, there might be a delay in their ability to take advantage of it. So this is one of those questions where they should definitely seek counsel and review the contract and see where they are.
All right, you keep listening because we'll try to get Jerry to address that very question.
Okay, great. Thanks
Adam,
so
it
much.
Blows me away. Thank you for calling. Adam, it blows me away that people can stop making house payments and live in their house for 2 years.
Well, we found that in a lot of states, when people are tenants, there are fascinating laws. There's also a roommate protection law in one state, where if you live in someone's house for more than 30 days, let's say you've gone through some personal trauma, your friend has agreed to take you in, maybe while their kids were away at camp, and they say, okay, we're ready now, you can leave. And under that law, you literally have to go to court to get them evicted. So it's a lot of people have a lot of opportunities to stick around.
Yeah,
both
sticking
around. In foreclosure situations as well as in rental situations.
We have Jerry. Jerry, we had a caller. Her name is Sherry. She's a merchant. She wants to know, since she's in a contract, will these new merchant swipe fee rules delay anything for her, or does she go right into the new situation?
That's a great question, and Sherry is probably going to be disappointed because her contract probably is not going to change her swipe fees immediately. So she's going to need to renegotiate her contract or wait till it expires before she gets the new swipe fees. And I think that's one reason why, even though we have this October 1st date, you shouldn't expect that everything's going to change on October 1st because it won't necessarily.
Great information. Where do we find you?
At credit.com.
Credit.com.
It's a pleasure to spend time with you. We're all very excited about seeing your series that's going to be starting on Monday with Credit.com on the whole concept of how to deal with underwater mortgages. And thank you so much for joining us on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
As always, Adam, we've had her as a guest before. She is a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant person. We're about to take a break. Our phone number is 888-539-2980. 888-KFWB-980. When we come back, we're going to be talking about things like, can you really stop making payments for more than 4 months with a government-backed loan? And more. You're listening to The Credit Line with Adam Levin and Jeff Levy. 888-539-2980. KFWB News Talk 980. KFWB News Talk 980, you're listening to The Credit Line with Adam Levin. I'm Jeff Levy, your host. If you have questions about your credit, you want to bring your credit score up, call us at 888-539-2980. All right, you're engaged to be married, your honey doesn't have very good credit, and you do, and you're worried about it, you just call 888-539-2980 if you're worried about your identity and you want to learn how to keep it safe. Stay right here and call in at 888-539-2980.
Well, Jeff, the good news is I am engaged, and my honey has good credit, so
hallelujah.
I'm excited about that.
Good
so
job.
Anyway, some very interesting things have happened in the world this week, especially in the world that we do a lot of work in. And first, we have what we call Breach Watch. Chris Mogg of Credit.com broke a really big story this week. Now, this is a cautionary tale for investment houses and brokerage firms in California, as well as the tax department in California, because in New York, Morgan Stanley Smith Barney had a little bit of a problem. They were delivering two unencrypted, that's the key word, unencrypted, password protected. Now remember, kids can break passwords. Unencrypted and password protected CD-ROMs containing information on 34,000 files. It had to do with tax-exempt income earned by people who were with Morgan Stanley Smith Barney. They mailed it to the State Department of Taxation as part of their 1099 report, and somewhere between Morgan Stanley Smith Barney and the New York State Department of Taxation's correct person who was supposed to receive it, they just disappeared. And we're talking about 34,000 accounts with names, social security numbers, trust information, tax ID numbers, Morgan Stanley Smith Barney passwords, and how much tax-exempt money was actually made by people in those accounts. So we're not just talking about an event, it's like dinner and a show. You're talking about an identity attached to some really significant assets. Nobody can figure out what happened. Everybody's pointing fingers. It's he said, she said, they said.
Adam,
then, yes, sir.
It's so easy to crack a password. Any kid can do it. You hit it right on the head. Why would they send this kind of information in the mail or with a courier and not encrypt it? It's insane.
I don't know why they would send it any possible way and not encrypt it. Now, I know the Department of Taxation now has a new secure communication system that they can transmit it more securely. That system apparently wasn't up at the time this happened, but you kind of ask yourself, in the world we live in, after all of the speeches and all of the reports and all of the misery and all of the lawsuits, how something like this could happen. Everybody assures everyone now it will never happen again. But unfortunately, there's 34,000 accounts out there that are pretty freaked out at the moment. But now to add to that misery, the bad guys are coming at us again because Kiplinger's just announced yesterday. And, you know, those are the guys that do the letters on personal finance and tax, retirement planning and success with your money. They just announced that somebody in an unauthorized fashion crawled into their data system and got names, email addresses, passwords, and encrypted credit card information. At least the credit card information was encrypted. So I guess somebody wants to succeed with your money and is planning to use it for themselves as a retirement vehicle. As I keep saying to people, they are surrounding us. Identity theft is not preventable. You can limit your risk of exposure. You can have tools and practices in place that help you detect as quickly as possible you're a victim, and you need a damage control program to make absolutely sure that if you are a victim, somebody who is a professional can help you get through it.
Our phone number, 888-539-2980, 888-KFWB-980. Adam, what are some of the tools we can use? You mentioned tools, how we protect ourselves. It's really out of our hands. What do we do?
Well, there's tools and practices. I mean, tools would be credit and fraud monitoring programs where they notify you of any untoward activity or any new activities actually occurring in any of your credit accounts. They also monitor databases where your personal identifying information is, so that when there's anything that in any way is a change that's an anomaly, you're notified. Because oftentimes we don't necessarily hear about situations just because they happened in our credit account. We need to find out when something's going on because someone is trying to recreate us. And it's usually in that formative process where phone numbers change, where addresses change, things like that, where the notification can really be an important thing. And one last thing is that practice is in place. So you should be set up a program with your bank or your credit union or your credit card company where certain transactions over a certain amount, you get an email or a text telling you about them. You should also be checking your accounts on a daily basis, both bank and credit card accounts, to make sure that every transaction you see is really your transaction and isn't perhaps an early warning sign that you're having an identity theft issue.
Good job. Our phone number, 888-539-2980. We have Brian, who's calling from Tahunga. Got to learn to pronounce that right. Brian, welcome to the show. You're on with Jeff and with Adam Levin.
Hi, Jeff. Hi, Adam. Thank you guys for having me on the show. How are you guys doing this morning?
Perfect.
We're terrific. Welcome.
So I'm just trying to figure something out. You know, I'm getting married to, you know, my girlfriend of a long time, and her credit is not so great, not as good as mine. And I want to know how us getting married is going to affect my credit.
Good question.
Well, it doesn't necessarily have to affect your credit. First of all, your credit is separate from her credit. If you choose to do something jointly, then you do run the risk that when they run the credit report and they also check the credit scores out, usually they tend to look at the lower credit score. They use that as a guidepost for actually setting rates. So you might work on ways of helping to build her credit. It's called ping-ponging. One way is that you might add her as additional card holder to your credit card. The second thing is you might become a co-signer for her if you buy a car or something to help her credit there. In addition to that, if you have a CD, what you might do is make an arrangement with a financial institution where you would take a loan out against the CD and it would be paid back quickly, that she would take it out in her name, and that's another way to build credit. So there are many different ways to do it, and you guys should use this as an opportunity to help build up her credit, because if, God forbid, something happens to you down the road, either there's an illness or a death or an unemployment situation, the stronger that you can make each person's individual credit history, the better for both of you.
Would that apply also, Adam, if your sweetheart or your other has no credit, literally nothing, never bought anything, never paid anything, never owed anything? By the way, our phone number, 888-539-2980.
Oh, absolutely. It totally applies. Always, whoever has the stronger credit or who has credit should be thinking of positive ways that they can use that as an asset to help their significant other. I think it just inures to the benefit of both parties.
What would happen if I got engaged to somebody who has a bankruptcy on their record, maybe 2 years, 3 years ago? Is that going to drag me down?
Doesn't have to drag you down. The way that it doesn't drag you down is that at least over a period of time, when purchases were to be made or credit was to be extended, that you would do it with your credit and not with their credit. And then over time, you would find ways of adding them to your credit card or co-signing for them or doing things like that that would help. So these are the ways that you need to think about, how do I build it? Because one of the greatest gifts that you can give a significant other is the ability of helping them strengthen their credit so that when you're not there, they're in a position to actually be as independent as possible and not be confronted by a situation where their negative past is going to hurt them and their ability to kind of live the life they'd like to live.
Well, we appreciate the call, Brian. Our phone number, 888-539-2980. That's a great approach, Adam. You're giving a gift to somebody you love and you're going to marry. You're going to give security. You're going to give your heart, your soul, and, oh, yeah, we're going to help you with your credit. And that's for real.
No, and you know, the great thing, too, is that, you know, if you're concerned about how responsible that your significant other may be with it, then, for instance, with a credit card, don't co-sign. Make them an additional cardholder, because all you need to do is make one phone call and they're no longer a cardholder on your card. But if it's a co-signing situation, that's one where it's not so easy. You'd have to close the account. They may not be willing to close their account. And if any mistakes that are made could come back to haunt you. So plan it out, develop a strategy, follow the strategy, but do it the right way.
Great information. Our phone number is 888-539-2980, 888-KFWB-980. It's an interesting phone number. It's real easy, 888-KFWB-980. Adam, we're going to take a break in just about a minute. I did have a quick question myself, though. Do the credit card companies, do they oppose adding somebody as a named cardholder, or is that just kind of, okay, we do it?
No, they're kind of happy, because that just means more spending.
It's more spending. Yeah, that's how to keep the credit card companies happy. You got to spend more.
They never met a fee they didn't like.
You know what, Adam? I'm going to write that down and tape that across my computer monitor. They never met a fee they didn't like. I love that. You're listening to The Credit Line. You can catch us here regularly on a weekly basis here at KFWB. If you have questions about your credit, about your identity, about staying safe, about staying out of trouble, 888-539-2980. When we come back, we'll throw it open. We've got a lot more information to discuss, and this is the only place you're going to find it at this level. We get it all. We got the questions. You come in, we've got the answers. It's really quite that simple. So write the number down, 888-539-2980. You're listening to a show called The Credit Line, and you can hear it exclusively right here on KFWB News Talk 980. KFWB News Talk 980. This is The Credit Line with Adam Levin. I'm Jeff Levy, your host. Here is where you learn all the things you need to know to survive the credit waterfall. It's a long drop down, and that's why we're here to protect you. Adam, we were talking about putting our spouses to be people whose credit may not be great as signers on our card. What if the card company says, well, they've got terrible credit. We don't want to put them on.
Well, generally, they have a tendency not to look initially if you add someone as an additional cardholder. I mean, some companies will ask for Social Security numbers, some won't necessarily. So you have to look around for the credit card company that is the most forgiving. But remember, this is really on your credit. So you're responsible for getting the bill if they're an additional cardholder. It's a whole different story if you're a co-signer, and then you're putting your credit on the line as well. But they might be a little bit more prickly when it comes to that. So it's one of those things where shop around, make sure that the card company is willing to do what you want them to do, but it's a good idea. Anything you can do to help is important. That's why it's so important to have the big talk before you get married, where it's kind of like, you know, you show me yours, I'll show you mine, and we're talking about credit reports, is that it's really an important topic to discuss. Compatibility when it comes to money is a very important thing. If someone's a spender and someone's a saver, these are the kind of issues that you have to talk out so that you don't end up in a situation where the marriage blows apart. And let's face it, infidelity and money issues are the two biggest killers of marriages. And money issues, I think, is even the biggest marriage killer. So talk it out.
I was going to say that not necessarily in that order. I think money is probably the largest contributor to divorces. And, of course, here in California, one out of two marriages end up in divorce court. Nice. Adam, let's talk to Joe in Long Beach. Joe, you're on with Adam Levin.
Okay, good morning.
Good morning.
I have a credit about, I have never bought anything with a credit card or had credit. Do I have to worry about ID theft?
You always have to worry about the possibility of ID theft because as long as you've got a name, an address, a social security number, and a birth date, which pretty much covers everybody, you are a potential victim of identity theft. And the fact that you may never have bought anything on credit before may well mean that your address isn't that known to a lot of creditors. So when someone applies for credit, if they're using your social security number and they come up with another address and you're not a frequent credit flyer, as it were, no one will really notice anything different, although other than, hey, this person is finally starting to develop a credit profile. So it's very important to always stay alert, check your bank account to see if there's any untoward activity going on. You just need to be as aware as possible. Whether you use credit or not, you can be a victim.
You can, especially if you have no established pattern. If there's no pattern, there's nothing to look at to see, oh, it's outside the pattern.
Well, you know, one of the best assets that an identity thief can get their hands on is what's known as a dormant social security number. Now, sometimes this is because someone has recently passed away. Sometimes it's because it's a child's social security number. But it could also be the social security number of somebody who just really never used credit very much, if at all. So as a result, yeah, they may face the issue of could they have a thin file, which might make it more difficult for them to get credit. But then there are other forms of identity theft that go way beyond the money and way beyond credit. And that's medical identity theft and criminal identity theft. So it pays to be alert. It pays to have programs that are there that will help you detect. It pays to have practices in place. And it also pays to get a damage control program. And an easy way to get a damage control program, talk to your insurance agent, your bank, your credit union, or your employer. They actually may have programs already in place that benefit you because of your relationship with them, or they might be able to give you a path to get part of a program for a lot less money than what you see advertised on television often with companies that could be charging several hundred dollars a year in order to provide you protection.
Adam, I think there's a perception out there with the public that identity theft is a product of the internet and computers, when in fact, I think a lot of identity theft comes from plain old paper and people don't shred.
It comes from theft of mail, dumpster diving, theft of purses and wallets in the workplace or while people are on vacation. It comes from the theft of databases. Either by somebody walking out of the office with an employee database or people hacking into systems or like we talked about earlier with the Morgan Stanley Smith Barney situation or Kiplinger's. And the other scary thing is that now that a lot of the major companies have been hit with breaches that are just involved with email, getting your name and your email address is like getting your social security number of the digital age. And you have to watch out every time you look at your email and every time you open something that it could be containing a worm or a virus, or it could be taking you unwittingly to a website that looks like the website that you thought you were doing business with and asks you for certain information. You give it, and then all of a sudden you become a victim.
Yeah, it happens that quick. And so it can happen. Thanks for the call, Joe. It can happen to you if you don't use credit. It can happen to you if you don't use the internet. You have to be on guard. Adam, the Obama administration is kind of making rumbles about extending the number of months you can stay in your home if you have a government-backed loan from its current 4 months. What's the backstory?
Well, I think the backstory is it has to do with the extended unemployment situation that we're facing. And, you know, that only became even more poignant yesterday, Friday, when the report came out, the jobs report, which was a total disaster. And what's so interesting is that when we look at reports from the Federal Reserve and it talks about the fact that consumer credit is starting to increase, or certainly their most recent report said consumer credit expanded by another $5 billion. Some people's instant reaction is, well, that's great news because that means that more people are spending, which means they're feeling better about things, which means that we can begin the process of spending our way back into recovery. But there's a flip side to this, and that is it also possible that the economy is having such a rough patch again that more people are borrowing to actually pay for their living expenses? And if that's the case, that's really scary. So this is one of those things where you really need to stay tuned and keep your eye on the ball when it comes to the employment figures. So again, that extension really, from what I understand, relates to people who are suffering through extended unemployment, and they're trying to figure out how to help them not lose their homes because a lot of people are unemployed through no fault of their own.
Well, I think when people hear, oh, the government's going to give me 12 months, that doesn't mean you're off the hook. You still have to pay the money somewhere.
Oh, no, there's definitely, they're going to be coming back. There is no free lunch when it comes to mortgages and staying in your home. That people have to remember. Something else interesting, what I call Score Watch. Coming up this month, people who apply for credit and services, and if they get rejected or receive an unfavorable rate, they'll get to see the score that was used to torpedo them. Now, the sad thing is you're only getting to see your credit score if something bad happens to you, but at least for the first time, there is going to be a much wider distribution of credit scores. Some companies will even have the right to distribute credit scores to anyone who applies to them because they don't want to get into that messy thing of, is it really a favorable rate? Is it not a favorable rate? And that's coming this month, as well as the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which everybody is pretty excited about, certainly the folks I know. There was a huge cover story, as a matter of fact, in Business Week this week about Elizabeth Warren and the enormous impact she's had on borrowing in this country and the big changes that are coming. July is going to be a very, very exciting month in the world of consumer protection and credit.
Adam, where's the best place to get a free credit report?
Annualcreditreport.com. That is the government-mandated site where you're entitled to a copy of a credit report from each of the three credit reporting agencies, Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. And some people get them all in one shot. Some people spread them out over a period of every 4 months. They get another report, so they get a different snapshot of where they sit.
And can you get a free one every year, or is it a one-time shot?
Nope, you're entitled to a free report from each of the three agencies every year.
Thanks for joining us. You've been listening to The Credit Line with Adam Levin and Jeff Levy. You tune in. We've got answers for those crazy credit questions. You won't find the answers anywhere else. Got to pay attention to The Credit Line right here on KFWB News Talk 980.